But my name's Thomas Hill. So I worked at Fox for about 10 years, and prior to that was a consultant. And then right now I work as head of product for MediaMorph. As we were joking earlier, I don't think we wanted to grow up and become data or metadata experts. I'm certainly enjoying my fire engines and trains much more, but that's the cool thing.
And here's a mic if you need it.
Cool, thanks. So we're going to talk a little bit about data in the context of Hollywood and all the fun and excitement that's going on. This is meant to be more of a philosophical conversation and higher themes. Hello. I love when I see my friends who love data here. And not as much technical. I think today there's always a lot of technical, and people don't talk about the human effort that goes behind some of what we work on. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And basically, for our workflow, we're going to talk a little bit about what shapes our journey, some of the examples, some of the drivers, and how you move forward in any data plan. And the reality is that in today's world, these four hipster-looking people are the ones driving our lives. So if you think about all the consumers and where you go for branding and where you go for marketing, this is the phrase, and I have to give credit to Jerry, who I worked before, I want what I want when I want it, and I want it now. This is fundamentally different from just a few years ago, where if you had data and if you had content, you were pitching it out. I don't know if anyone is old enough, but do you remember how long it took for E.T. to hit HBO? It was about 9 years, and now you're having things online that are out seconds, or sometimes, if illegally, out before they actually hit theaters. So content is everywhere, and I know we've covered that theme today quite extensively. And I do like this happy little group of people because they look so happy and they're carrying mobile devices and they've got backpacks and they're cool and hip. I had someone ask me yesterday how old I was and they suggested I started with a 5, at which point I was not happy with the hipster. All right, so the destination. Look, the reality is we talk about, you know, authentic and high quality content. And there's always data associated with that from the production stems. And then it sort of gets more difficult from there because you're looking for interactive and experiential type content. And that's all driven by data. And I think that sometimes there's this view still that there's a magic button or a magic box that can make experiences happen. And as you talk to our branding colleagues, you know that if content's going to sell, if it's going to make a difference, it has to be sticky. And interactivity actually makes that happen usually. Richly tagged content, so now you're tagging content not just at a parent level and a top level, you're tagging it at the scene level, you're tagging it at the second level, and you're tagging it in multiple levels at that time stop in the content. So you have multiple dimensions, multiple cubes going on at the same time where you didn't have it before. And then, of course, many viewing alternatives. If you look at the device count in the universe right now, somewhere between that number and what's space junk circulating the Earth is, you know, billions and millions of devices. And if you have content, you have to be able to access the market and get it out there on any potential device that you see. So this is sort of setting up the fun, and maybe this is why we're all in therapy. But the industry right now is just growing, and it's getting more complex, and it's supposed to get to market faster. And consumers are not forgiving. I have a friend of mine who sells car wash things on Amazon. And there was one bad shipment that went wrong. And within an hour of like those 10 items being out in the universe, there were 10 one-star reviews on Amazon with horrible language telling the whole world how terrible it is. Now, for content providers, we have real-time feedback like that as well. I think in terms of what it used to be, like if a disc went out in the physical environment and something went wrong, a consumer would call a line, maybe there was a blog. Now, if something goes wrong with your content, you know it instantly. This is real-time feedback world that highlights the critical importance of data. The data challenges, you know, the unforced errors. I think the reality is, and most industries suffer from the same thing, is the world still runs a little bit on Excel. Maybe just a little bit. Maybe it's sent by email. Maybe you're sending megabytes worth of rows and thousands and millions of pieces of data to your colleagues via Excel, and it happens that way. That's true. But, you know, thumbs and fat-fingering things still happen as well. There's a great example from an unnamed content provider last year, and I was in line with her, and I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "Well, we just sent a huge file to a platform, and column A to column D were row 1, and column E on were row 2. Which meant the entire data file was rejected by the content platform, and their content went dark for 7 days as like they tried to piece it back together again. One simple error from someone who was just in a hurry to get something done, and it's a very human thing. heroic efforts, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. I think at this point, we all should have capes. I've seen like really cool metadata costumes. That's a little geeky, but if you want one for Halloween, I have some suggestions. All right, so these are things that we know, and rapid change, direct to consumer. This one is causing more angst, I think, for data and platforms and supply chain in the sense of it's an amazing opportunity. Because if you've ever worked with a content provider or a platform that when they were giving you consumer intelligence, my favorite one was a meeting years ago where you had an x-axis, the y-axis, and a line. There were no numbers, there were no labels, and you had no idea what you were looking at. But there was an upward trend, right? So part of what's driving this is let's get to the consumer directly. Let's find ways to meaningfully understand how our product and our content is actually working. Merger mania. So I asked an audience a couple months ago how many people in the room were being acquired or in the process of acquiring someone else, and more than half the room raised their hand, which is scary and exciting, and again, a reason for therapy. So, you know, increased content cost. Interactivity isn't cheap. You have to produce it, you have to hire people to tag it, you have to take care of all the dimensions to it. This is something that's really rich, and rich content isn't easy yet. And I know there are a lot of ideas that come out about automation and AI that can make that process better. But again, you know, content costs are going up. In some ways, profits are lower. I don't know. You have a mixed bag. The last one, just tightening regulations. For anyone that is hitting OK on every website they have ever gone to because of Europe, and the Data Protection Act, okay. How many of you have actually read any of the fine print? Because it probably says they're just using it to do anything they want. But you said okay, but there's going to be more of that. All right, so let's talk about, again, just to highlight it, you know, it's October, and we know what's happening. And I bet you by January, you're going to have even more buying and complexity. Everyone's going to come back from Christmas and holidays and figure out how to retune the product, redo the content to go out to the marketplace, and then, you know, who knows what's going to happen in 2020. I think at that point, whether you're a 4K, 8K, interactivity, you know, which part of the experience are you doing? Is it VR? Is it AR? Is it AVOD? Is it SVOD? There are so many things that could happen. It's just going to continue to grow. Or there's the opposite theory, which someone said earlier at lunch, which is all content is going to collapse because gaming is taking over the universe. I don't know. They were very bitter, so I'm not sure which part of the industry they work in, but their therapy is not going well. All right, so let's talk about a little bit on the data philosophy. And again, just some points to highlight. It's really interesting. The worst meeting you can go into for a system or a data project is to start with the actual data, right? If you just dive right in without understanding what your goals are, you're not going to be successful. You also can't measure your success if you don't define the goals up front. We talk a lot about, you know, whether content data should be static or dynamic. And this is not talking about standards. Standards absolutely should be part of the data conversation. But I think there is a balance for each organization about how dynamic and flexible their data model is going to be. The reality is that if you are putting out static content and you're not changing it as much, maybe that's part of the business goal and the success for the organization. Other companies are changing their data model on a frequent basis because they never built the capacity for flexibility or that dynamic factor in. Metadata enrichment. So I think it's interesting. When we talk about enrichment, I love that word. Like, it's so positive. You want to enrich your metadata. You want to make it grow. And there's so much effort behind it sometimes. But, you know, enrichment happens now on a permanent and ongoing basis. It's not just something where you enrich once and then put it out there and you fire and forget. It's actually something that you're continuing to do again and again. Automation is something that can help with it, but, you know, you have to know what your goals are and what your model is and what you want to come out of automation, and you also have to be prepared to relinquish some of that control. Because when the robots send your content around the world at exactly 12:49 GMT or whatever time your content is being released, remember that earlier slide where someone fat-fingered the time? There's a very famous, from a former company of mine, moment where an episode of a certain show went out before it broadcast, and unfortunately the vice chairman of that certain company lived in that territory and got to order it before it was broadcast. You know, that's just because someone typed a 2 instead of a 1. So. All right, defining where to begin and putting a plan together is basically the theme for this one. All right, so 9 favorite things about data. dirty data. Now, some of you have heard me talk about this before. I love dirty data because I think it's misnamed. This is actually opportunistic data. This is happy data. This is data that wants you to love it because it's the soil that will grow, you know, your customers and grow your content. Now, as a really mundane, down-to-earth example of data, so I drove 3,500 miles across the country this summer, beautiful drive, and before I got in the car, I matched all of my socks. So sock A, one sock B, hundreds of pairs of socks, and we were really feeling feisty, and Goodwill almost got all of the unmatched ones. But basically, we left them all behind. We traveled 3,500 miles, we go through Texas, we live in the East Coast for a couple months. And I have to admit that even though there was methodology, taxonomy, governance of the sock project, I now have, in the top closet on the left-hand side, the unmatched socks that have suddenly developed. In 2 months, I have unmatched socks, and I don't understand it. And we follow the rules. The dog's not eating the socks. I'm not throwing them out. Like, no one's stealing them. And I highlight this for dirty data partially because it is a living and breathing entity. And, you know, even us, on a simple level, we did a cleanup, and we put the data through, and now we have more dirty data, or in this case, unmatched socks. So, silos. My favorite silo story over the years, and this happens all the time, it can be part of a room, it can be a team, is that you have one group of people who don't want the other group of people to have data. It can be a system, it can be a human decision, it can be legacy. And my favorite moment is when one group of people exported their data to an Excel sheet, who then print it at the copier, who then brought it to the meeting to hand to paper, who then gave it to my exec, who then handed it to me to scan it into Excel so that we could read it and then put it in our system. And this happened on a bi-weekly basis. So silos, how you deal with it and work with it, again, this is a part of that conversation and that negotiation to get to the data excellence. Locked up data. All right, so sometimes you just can't reach data, or maybe it's in a system or a location where maybe it's difficult, but the worst kind is the secret data, right? So if you're running a business over the years, normally organically, there probably was a reason why you put certain, you know, data pieces into a safe harbor, and then you forgot the key or you lost it. And I think this becomes a really critical part because it's an open and honest conversation saying, okay, look, if you actually have something you need to be able to share it, you can't lock it away. All right, governance. I'm going to say enough said, because if you don't have governance, then your therapy isn't going to go well either. This one is interesting. So levels of acceptance. And you don't have to raise your hand. But how many of you have ever been told by a boss, when you present them with the actual data and what is really happening in the world, and you are told, no, 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 no. It's actually not that. It's this number, right? So you get them to the number 10, you have all of your data, you've pieced everything together, you've got a beautiful multi-dimensional model that will release content, and then you're told that your data is wrong. Now this is okay, but the real thing behind it is that there's a human subjective piece about data. And if you don't build up that background and that support so that people accept the data that you're putting together, you get into those moments. Now I had one of them where I was told by the number what the number would be. And so in that particular project, we ran two books. We ran, and I'm being punished by someone, we ran a book on the real data, and then we ran the alternate book. And so you have two sets of books. Divergent systems, again, if anyone has ever counted content providers or platforms or anyone in the universe, how many systems it takes to get from point A in production to the consumer, and I see weeping starting in several people's eyes, the average guess, I don't know, from some, it's anywhere from 16 to 30, is still the reality in this beautiful, amazing business that brings dreams and hearts soar and a Hallmark movie to make you cry at 2 in the morning. So it's still that many systems. And they weren't built to talk to each other. Like, think about the old IBM days. They built systems to last forever and never, ever to talk to each other. Now people must really talk about transference and being able to be interchangeable. Incompatible frameworks, what taxonomy? I think that we talk about taxonomy a lot. You say taxonomy and people start looking for their iOS 1040. And then last one to anchor it all, it's just gone. Your data's gone in your data journey and you have to either recreate it or find it. So some highlighted things to think about for strategy. It's not magic beans, but it is, you know, what I call the shoveling snow theory. The mayor of Chicago and New York doesn't get fired because there aren't enough parks or there aren't enough people. They get fired because the snow sits on the street for 2 weeks, and that's why they get fired. And when you're talking about data, there's a real methodical approach as you're thinking about these things, and you just gotta shovel through it. So think about socks. So I put up random happy metadata snapshots. I forget which one and what movie this comes from, but metadata is scary. Like, if you walk into a room and you're talking to business users and owners in any area, finance, creative, marketing, this is what they envision. The best way to turn off and not get your project approved, obviously, is to walk into a room and say, today we're going to talk about metadata. Like, that just doesn't happen. You should lead that meeting with, by the way, metadata is sexy and here's why. That's the line you should use. Or you should say, I'm going to grow your business 80% in the next 6 months. A pin will drop. The interesting thing about metadata, just things to ruminate on when you're getting ready for bed tonight, is how you set a flexible structure at the beginning and how that pays dividends down the end. And we're going to talk a little more about dynamic versus standards. But when you think about metadata, no one can predict this business in 12 months, in 18 months, in 24 months. I remember sitting in rooms and we were talking about the billion, the $2 billion transactional business that would happen. And then SVOD showed up. And the entire world, who's 14 to X age and whatever demo you want, is now watching it. And they're consuming data like crazy. I was watching Catching Up on whatever crime show I was catching up on the plane. I watched 4 episodes on the flight in. Amazing. What does that mean? What work went into that? Like, the volume is insane. No one's going to be able to predict it. All right, so how do you empower the business? Let's talk about some of the basics. So building a structure, you know, we've talked about that. EITR, if you have an EITR, you should EITR. I think EITR actually should stop giving technical presentations and sponsor like dance parties. We should have EITR dance parties, I think. Technical metadata, very different than editorial metadata. These are different audiences that you're talking to, and you have to have different structures and conversations about it. Because the technical assets will drive more of your technical metadata, while the editorial layers and how you're making that interactivity is going to be the structure here. And then metadata enrichment. Just remembering that it's not fire and forget. It's an evolution. All your data is alive. They are my socks. They are crawling out of the drawer all on their own. And drawer is not a real way to say that word. All right, so next one. So stops along the way. And this one I just think is funny because, like, basically, if you think about all of your data sources that happen, this is but a fraction of what you're doing to go from, you know, reels or the equivalent of data, you know, an online repository, whether it's in the cloud, to your happy consumer. All of these people think differently. Archives, business users, party, consumer feedback, the art department, all of it has a different flavor and a different personality of their data. And I think that when you think about that, it's another happy, dirty data moment. Like, these people are amazing. They all want to be successful, but you're not talking to all of them the same way, and you have to come up with different strategies for that. And at the end, you have enriched, unified data. It is the sun, it is the glory, and your consumer is happy. Yes? Okay. Highlighting the benefits of the data plan during your conversations. I'm not sure what they're doing, but they're good. So, we're going to skip to scale. Let's talk about scalability, and you can read some of the rest of these. But let's talk about scalability and risk. So on scalability, now that so many titles are going out there, if you think about some of the platforms run, you know, 1,000 titles that they're really controlling and looking at in the world, and those are being done by algorithms. Think about your favorite SVOD provider and how they're creating content for you by an algorithm, by data, and they're scaling, and they're scaling, and they're scaling. The production of content that's coming out of LA and from all the new content providers is amazing. And it's being powered, I bet you, by a really sexy metadata plan, among other things, but it's powered by data. Because an asset without metadata is useless. It is sitting there, it is the equivalent of a rock of copper that's not going anywhere. The other one, just to talk a little bit about risk, if you've released ever content earlier than it should have, in a market it shouldn't have. I think years ago, we were working with the sales guys, and like, great news, we sold these movies. And you're like, that's awesome. You have no rights in France. What do you mean we have no rights in France? The system says right here, oh, we have no rights in France. So it's, you know, you're setting up a structure for content distribution success, and again, mitigating risk. So these look very familiar to everyone. All right, replacing your gut with data-driven impact. It still happens. We talk about being a data-driven organization, and a lot of it is still emotion. right? We put so much time and effort into the structure of data for content production and distribution, and so much time and effort into metadata. Sometimes at the end of it, when you're looking at the results, people still do the win test. How does this feel? For anyone who knows where their executives live, I think one of the funny things that is within any organization that develops content, the billboards near where the chairman or the president lives always has the best material that's up there. The chairman of Fox for years would take a vacation in Greece. You would never believe how often our Greek content spiked the week before he got there so that he could go on iTunes and see how amazing everything was going, right? Funny ways, but you know, portable results and especially metrics. If you can't metric it, if you can't measure your success, there is no way to know if you're on point for what your business needs and for where their content is going. So in the middle at the beginning, I'm gonna leave you with this thought, and if you have any questions or anything else, is just remember when we talk about all the numbers and all the Excel sheets and all the systems in the world, data can only take an organization so far. The real drivers are the people. So that's my humanist end to the talk. Thank you for being very kind and smiling and laughing along. Cheers. Any questions, thoughts?